I live quietly, cheaply, like a widow with no house of my own that no man wants. And this is because I am a widow with no house of my own that no man wants. A woman of nearly 30 years old, with a face scored by disappointment, mother to an absent son, a widow without prospect of remarriage, the sole survivor of an unlucky family, heiress to scandal. My dream is that one day this luck will change. I will see a messenger in Howard livery riding down this very road, bringing a letter for me, a letter from the Duke of Norfolk, to summon me back to court, to tell me that there is work for me to do again, a queen to serve, secrets to whisper, plots to hatch, the unending double-dealing life of a courtier at which he is so expert, and I am his greatest pupil. My dream is that the world will change again, swing topsy-turvy, until we are uppermost once more, and I am restored. I saved the Duke once, when we were in the worst danger, and in return, he saved me. Our great sorrow was that we could not save the two of them, the two who now ride and laugh and dance only in my dreams. I touch the milestone once more, and imagine that tomorrow the messenger will come. He will hold out a paper, sealed with the Howard crest, deep and shiny in the red wax. "A message for Jane Boleyn, the Viscountess Rochford?" he will ask, looking at my plain kirtle and the dust on the hem of my gown, my hand stained with dirt from the London milestone. "I will take it," I shall say. "I am her. I have been waiting forever." And I shall take it in my dirty hand. My inheritance.
Anne, Duchess of Cleves, Durham, Cleves, July 1539. I hardly dare to breathe. I am as still as a block, a smile stuck on my face, my eyes wide open, looking boldly at the artist, appearing, I hope, trustworthy, my frank stare indicating honesty but not immodesty. My poor old jewels are the best that my mother could lay her hands on, designed to show to a critical viewer that we are not quite paupers, even though my brother will offer no dowry to pay a husband. The king will have to choose me for my pleasant appearance and political connections. I have nothing else to offer. But he must choose me. I am absolutely determined that he will choose me. It is everything to me to get away from here. On the other side of the room, carefully not observing my portrait forming under the painter's quick, sweeping strokes of the crayon, is my sister, awaiting her turn. God forgive me, but I pray that the king does not choose her. She is as eager as me for the chance to leave Cleves and to leap to such greatness as the throne of England, but she does not need it as I do. No girl in the world can need it as I do. Not that I will speak so much as one word against my brother. Nothing now and nothing in the years to come. I will never say anything against him. He is a model son to my mother and a worthy successor to the Dukedom of Cleves. During the last months of my poor father's life, when he was clearly as mad as any fool, it was my brother who wrestled him into his chamber, locked the door from the outside, and publicly gave out that he had a fever. It was my brother who forbade my mother to summon physicians or even preachers to expel the devils that occupied my poor father's wandering brains. It was my brother. Cunning, like an ox is cunning in a slow, mean way, who said that we must claim my father was a drunkard, rather than allow the taint of madness to diminish our family reputation. We will not make our way in the world if there is suspicion against our blood. But if we slander our own father, call him a sot, having denied him the help that he so desperately needed, then we may yet rise. This way I will make a good marriage. This way my sister will make a good marriage. This way my brother can make a good marriage, and the future of our house is assured, even though my father fought his demons alone and without help. Hearing my father whimper at the door of his chamber that he was a good boy now and would we let him out, hearing...